Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. This is a two-parter. There's two episodes within this specific podcast, both with Tim Gallagher, basketball historian. The first part was actually recorded on December 23rd before the loss at the Charlotte Hornets, after the disappointing loss at home to the Wizards. So we get in-depth on the state of the team. And then we also have another episode after that one that was recorded on December 19th, immediately after the three-game loss in a row to the Timberwolves and the back-to-back to the Milwaukee Bucks. So a lot of timeless topics in that one. We get on a number of discussions regarding, you know, players sitting out in the NBA. So all of it's still very relevant, and it gives you a good idea where the team has been over the course of the last week and a half. Obviously, we won last night with the return of Michael Carter-Williams. He does definitely bring, even though he was 0-for-5 from the field, he definitely brings that defensive presence. He's an excellent perimeter defender, and I think his presence was felt yesterday. And that exciting win that ended so greatly with Dwayne Wade's dunk over the Pacers at home, 90-85. So I hope you enjoy it. I hope you're having a great holiday and had a great Christmas and a happy Hanukkah, and I hope you have a fantastic New Year. We'll probably get one more episode out before New Year, hopefully one with Tim and hopefully one with Mark. So in the interim, shoot us an email at chicagobullseye@gmail.com, chicagobullseye@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at CBEFred, at CBEFred. All the best to you and your family. I hope you enjoy the show.
Tim Gallagher, basketball historian, joins the Bullseye again. And what you're going to hear after this quick introduction is an episode we recorded earlier this week, just before the Pistons game after the disastrous three-game losing streak with the back-to-back losses to Milwaukee and the loss to Minnesota. So we get on a variety of topics, including NBA players sitting out, a variety of timeless topics. In that episode, you can hear that immediately after this this updated show, which is being recorded on December 23rd. Tim, how you doing, brother? Happy holidays to you and your family, by the way.
You too, Fred. Merry Christmas, and yeah, looking forward to some time with the family here. It's looking ahead to 2017.
Amen, amen. So, Tim, I wanted to start out and get you on after this really disappointing loss to Washington, after an impressive victory against Detroit. Again, the teeter-totter continues, the slide continues up and down. It's a roller coaster of a season. Get your opinion on what happened against Washington, and also, you know, where do we go moving forward if this takes a negative turn?
Right. Well, it was disappointing, especially after the Pistons game, which happened just after we recorded, which the listeners will listen to here shortly. So I was really excited with the bounce back game after the disappointing Minnesota and Milwaukee losses, and the Bulls basically just blew the Pistons' doors off in that game, which was a great statement. So here they have another very winnable home game against a team that looks like they're going to be battling it out with for a playoff spot, the Wizards, and just can't close it out at home. And it's been really disappointing, especially with their home record. You know, the Bulls are really not protecting home court very well. And so that was disappointing. And just to see kind of what you'd expect maybe a Wade and Butler to do to close out a game, we saw Wall and Beal do to the Bulls. You know, so that's what I expect on a home court for Jimmy and D-Wade to take the lead and close things out, especially in a close game. So the Wizards are kind of making their move. We touched on that a little bit in the podcast that, again, it's going to be heard shortly after this brief recording. So with Wall and Beal healthy, they're going to be a challenge as well. So it is a disappointing roller coaster type season. So 14-14 as we're recording this, you know, kind of right in the thick of things though in the East. You know, for better or for worse, there's a lot of what we'll call average or mediocre teams. As I mentioned earlier, it looks like I see it as 9 teams for 6 spots. Cleveland and Toronto clearly are going to be the two top seeds in the East. But from there, it's really somewhat wide open. Now, Boston has made a little bit of a run here, winning 4 straight. But I still don't think they're a feared team. I think they're a very beatable team. You know, again, when your star player's a 5'11", you know, if he's that tall, point guard, and Al Horford is a very solid, excellent player, but, you know, is he a go-to guy late in the game that can beat somebody off the dribble? Or, you know, not to disrespect Al Horford, who's got a very solid career, I just don't see them as a Wall Beal or a Jimmy D. Wade, you know, guys to kind of close out games. But so in terms of opinion on where we go with things with the Bulls at this stage at 14-14, you know, it's not a very definitive answer for you here, but I'd say let's just wait and see a little longer, because it looks like, again, of these nine teams angling for playoff spots and kind of making their move, I think it's still pretty wide open. So, you know, the Hawks have kind of slipped a little bit lately. The Pistons have slipped a little bit. Indiana's overachieving a little bit, in my opinion. And you know, the Knicks have played better, but we'll see how they sustain that just with the injury history that Bulls fans know all too well with Noah and Rose, and then Carmelo. Can he sustain it? Obviously, Porzingis is a transcendent talent, and you know, it seems like every next game I see highlights or watch him play, he's doing things for a guy any size would be spectacular, but for a guy 7'3", is really impressive. So, you know, he might be able to carry them a little bit. But you know, I think the Bulls, though, are on equal footing with really just about all of those teams. And so I'd like to see it given a little bit more time. It's going to be tough on Christmas Day with the Spurs coming off a loss, and they haven't lost many on the road. That's only their second road loss of the season. But the Clippers took it to them last night without Blake Griffin. So I would have a feeling Pop is going to be kind of in a grinchy mood, and the Spurs are going to be very intent on winning at home on Christmas Day. So that's going to be a tough one for the Bulls, at least as far as looking at the next part of the schedule.
Agreed. So big picture, I mean, there's still a good chance to make the playoffs. I kind of figure it, and I'd like to get your opinion on this, that the plan is you got to make the playoffs this year. You got to be competitive. And assuming that Golden State does what it should, which is just destroy the Clippers in round one or two or whoever, sometime in the playoffs, you expect them to beat whoever comes at them and probably win convincingly. And then you're going to be left with a landscape of, you know, a Warriors team that looks almost unbeatable. And then a guy like Chris Paul and a guy like Blake Griffin are going to have to make some choices and say, where's our best shot of getting a title? And hoping that, you know, Wade can kind of replicate what he did in 2010 and bring some superstars to Chicago for another super team that could potentially challenge. It's either that or trade Jimmy and do a complete full rebuild. What do you think about those two options?
Well, I agree with that. And, you know, if this season does turn into a disaster, and I predicted at the front end of the season that the Bulls would be 45-37, which isn't spectacular, but it's solid. And, you know, at this point, that still is feasible. You know, we'll see how things go. But, I think you're right. If the season does turn negative, they finish, you know, below 500, you know, 500 or below, I think would be an unsuccessful season, even if they slip into the playoffs. And, they maybe rely on some of Wade's recruiting abilities, and Chicago still is a desirable market, even though the landscape of free agency has changed, where certain players, you know, in the big markets, we've talked about that a little bit, it's not as essential as it was back in the day for your brand or for marketing yourself as an NBA star. But Chicago obviously still has some illustrious history, and the Jordan connection will ring true for players probably as long as people are playing basketball. So there is some draw there. But, yeah, if it doesn't work out, possibly a trade of Jimmy, saying goodbye to Rondo, and trying to rebuild things. You know, it's a pretty deep draft, it looks like, this year as well, although as we see with young teams like Minnesota and the Lakers, who have young talent, and the Lakers showed some sparks early, but they've kind of settled back into to mediocrity or worse. They've lost 9 out of their last 10. So I think Luke Walton's getting a dose of reality in the sense that he was able to add some energy and a positive vibe with some of the young guys early in the season. And as we've seen with Tibbs in Minnesota, it's hard, even with exceptional young talent like Karl-Anthony Towns or Wiggins. It's hard to win in the league without experienced players. So the point I'm making is, even if the Bulls get a relatively high pick, it's probably not going to be someone that's going to change things up enough that it's going to take them to another level of contention. I'd say let's just ride this out a little bit longer and see if some of these teams find their lanes. Like I said, Boston's just won a couple in a row. The Wizards seem to be on a little better track. Detroit's lost 4 in a row, so they're all, it's kind of like a horse race with the Cavs and Raptors well ahead, and now the rest of the field trying to find their lane and finish respectively. So it's still a little bit early. I don't want to be noncommittal, but again, the Cleveland's not going to fall off the map here, but J.R. Smith's injured and is out for a while, so we'll see how that affects what they do. But again, with transcendent players like LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin Love, to a little bit lesser extent, obviously, than the first two guys, but that's going to be a tough team to beat night in and night out. Toronto still hasn't had Sullinger yet either, and he's a proven veteran. Again, not somebody who's going to take him to a whole nother level, but to add some depth to an already good team. I don't think the Raptors are going to be slipping much either in the East.
Amen. Tim, thanks for jumping on and recording this intro. Really appreciate it. And again, you've been a great addition to the Bullseye. I love having you on, getting your expertise on all these topics of the day. Looking forward to having you on again next week as we'll get one more show in before the new year and kind of update where we're at with the beloved Bulls. All the best, though. Merry Christmas to you and your family, and all the best in 2017. Again, we'll probably talk again next week, but really looking forward to seeing where the beloved is next week after a few tough games coming up.
Great. Yeah, well, we'll be watching Christmas Day and see how they do at San Antonio, which is, again, will be a handful, but we'll see if they compete. And, as much as anything, I'm not expecting them to win that game, but I expect them to compete and make it hard on the Spurs to win that game. So that's what my expectation is. And anything less than, competitive effort and making the Spurs really earn a home victory, anything less than that, then we'll have more to talk about on the next podcast. I had a couple other final thoughts. One of the things the listeners will hear on the recording right after this is I talked a little about UCLA basketball and the bloodlines, and I forgot all about Isaac Hamilton, who's one of the Bruins starters, and his brother, Jordan Hamilton, played at Texas and played in the NBA, is now playing overseas, and his younger brother, Daniel Hamilton, played at UConn and is now on the OKC D-League team. So I completely forgot about another one of the UCLA players and the bloodlines discussion I talked about, which it's pretty fascinating in terms of just the family histories of some of the people involved with this current number 2 ranked UCLA team. And then the last thing, I found a really interesting story on the Undefeated. I don't know if you've seen that website now that ESPN has kind of spun off, and some really good writing there.
Sure.
And there's a fascinating article about Stephon Marbury and the success he's had in China, and I kind of forgotten how solid his NBA career was, at least statistically. And again, several years was all-star level performance, but it's a real interesting story on his journey and his life and the fame he's found playing in China. And so if the listeners are looking for a good kind of games within the game story on, and I call Marbury the original Steph, because I actually saw him play back in 94. I double-checked the dates because they have this big holiday high school tournament at Torrey Pines High School right here in San Diego. And over the years, they've brought in a lot of the top players from all over the country. And seeing Marbury play for Brooklyn Lincoln High School, the Rail Splitters, I always loved that nickname, in 94, he put on a show. I mean, he was shooting jumpers from the volleyball line, it's a high school court, so it's got all the painted lines for the other sports, which is, probably not too many steps beyond half court. He was pulling up and shooting jumpers. And just with, now when we say Steph, obviously everybody thinks of Steph Curry, and rightly so. But for a time there, Marbury was, again, the original Steph and a very dynamic player in high school and then briefly at Georgia Tech and then a long pro career. So a good read, and I think the listeners might enjoy that one if they're looking for a good story on basketball and one of its interesting personalities.
Thanks, and great stuff. Great stuff. Yeah, looking forward to checking that out. He did have some good years in the NBA and kind of went south, I think, when he was with the Knicks. But great stuff to hear. So, again, Merry Christmas to you, brother. Looking forward to chat next week. And we'll talk again.
Okay, Fred. Yes, and it's a privilege to be on these podcasts with you and share my love of the game with you and the listeners, and hopefully that shines through in our discussions, and just love talking basketball and sharing our thoughts. So all the best to you and your family as well, Fred.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to all the listeners too, and again, and Happy Hanukkah. And what you're about to hear is a recording that Tim and I made just before the Detroit game, covering the three-game losing streak with the back-to-backs against Milwaukee and a variety of other timeless topics. Merry Christmas, everyone. Happy Hanukkah, and we'll talk again soon.
Tim Gallagher, NBA basketball historian, jumped on the Chicago Bullseye to give us his thoughts on the latest with the beloved Bulls. Tim, how are you doing, brother? Hope everything's going well for you this holiday season.
Yes, Fred. Happy holidays to you and all the listeners. And in a sometimes pretty turbulent world here, hopefully everyone can enjoy some time with their family and friends and enjoy a little peace, at least at a local level.
Hey, amen to that. Amen to that. So on to topics of a lighter venue, which are, of course, basketball, the NBA, college basketball, a little bit we're going to talk today. But let's start out with the situation with the Bulls, which, let's put it mildly, is at DEFCON 5 after just two horrific back-to-back losses to the Milwaukee Bucks and a loss after being up big against the Minnesota Timberwolves. I'd like to get your thoughts on the current situation. Let's start out with those three games and what you saw, what concerned you, and, you know, how do we dig ourselves out of this hole?
Sure. Well, and it was a very, very disturbing week in terms of losing a 21-point lead at home to Minnesota, who was, you know, right there in the basement of the league and, you know, battling out for the worst record in the league at that point. So since that 21-point lead evaporated and then the two losses to Milwaukee, it's certainly a low point of the season. And I certainly hope it doesn't get any lower. But, yeah, definitely just kind of disgusting watching the effort and the execution. And yeah, a couple of points, and certainly losing to Tibbs and then the Bucks with Snell, it kind of just rubbed salt in the wound, too, to those losses, as bad as it was, and kind of their recent coach and recent teammate having some laughs at the Bulls' expense, certainly not fun for any Bulls fan. But a couple things just in general with the team about this skid that they're on, and hopefully they've got Detroit at home tonight, which I'm going to be looking closely to see what turnarounds are going to be happening there, because that should be a winnable game, and a team that at this point now are kind of right neck and neck with the Bulls in the standings, more or less. But it seems like, and I don't know if it's a confidence thing or a execution thing or lack of talent, but it seems like in the Bulls offense that players are passing up shots or open shots and hesitating, and then it gets late in the shot clock and they're scrambling to make something happen, and they end up with not a good shot, a worse shot than someone might have had earlier in the shot clock. So and there just doesn't seem to be any sense of urgency, especially on the offensive end. And obviously guys are struggling to make shots as well. But even when they get those clean looks, they seem to be hesitating and passing that up. And then when the Bulls do move the ball, a lot of teams you'll see in the league will move the ball or, you know, make some quick skip passes to get it to the weak side away from the defense for an open look. But it just seems like the Bulls are not getting any clean or good looks. And it's probably a couple things. One is they're not shooting a good percentage from the three-point line, so teams aren't really threatened by that, and guys aren't really commanding double teams to open up those looks. But are you seeing that as well? It just doesn't seem like they get in any easy baskets. Agreed.
Well, let me jump in there first about the shooting from three. You know, every guy in this team, from McDermott to Nico to Cannon, everybody who's supposed to allegedly, you know, a decent shooter, is shooting well below their career percentage. You got to feel that's going to come back. But that said, Isaiah Cannon, it's just been a catastrophe for this team as a basketball player. He's got a tremendous amount of chances, a tremendous amount of looks. He's wide open on almost every one of his looks, and he's shooting, you know, sub 30% from three. And he brings absolutely nothing. He's too small. He's not a threat on the defensive end at all. He doesn't help out there. And for him to be shooting below 30%, when you consider the quality of the looks, I think you got to cut him. I think he's horrible. He's really regressed to the point that this is a disaster. Could you go one more time for the listeners? How did he end up on this team? There's a connection there between Fred and Iowa State. What is that connection again?
Well, the current coach of Iowa State was Isaiah Cannon's college coach at Murray State. So
there you go. Okay.
I'm assuming there was probably some network in play there that brought Cannon to the Bulls. And Cannon came into the league with the Rockets, and the Rockets are usually pretty good about finding undervalued players. Daryl Morey's got a reputation for that. So I thought that was a pretty shrewd pickup for him in the draft from Murray State, where he had a lot of success. Then he was with the Sixers, who were a really bad team, and so it's hard to say about his effectiveness there. You know, he had some bursts here and there in games where he showed some promise. And the other part of it that we've talked about on past podcasts is that he was a pretty economical free agent to pick up as well, and thinking that he could maybe add some offensive burst a la Aaron Brooks, you know, has given in the past. But yes, he's definitely, after some early promise at the front end of the season, has definitely not looked good recently. And there's a few others, too. I mean, obviously, with Nico shooting under 30% from the three-point line, that's totally unacceptable. And his game really seems to have regressed overall. And then missing practice, just, you know, he's certainly not on a good course. And then McDermott, missing the eight games certainly was a big setback for him. But shooting 32% from three-point line for McDermott is really unacceptable as well. And so,
agreed.
And you know his percentage is going to improve, and he's going to, as he gets his rhythm back and gets back into the minutes and rotation. The other thing is, after some promise in the NBA Summer League, and I totally understand there's a big leap between how somebody plays in Vegas in the Summer League and a real NBA game, but I thought Portis and Denzel Valentine showed enough in the Summer League that they would have been contributing at some point this season, and I think that's been a big, big disappointment as well. Again, Valentine, I know, had to set back with the ankle injury, but by now he should be able to, you know, be contributing somewhat, and his shooting percentages are abysmal, and I just expect that a four-year player from Michigan State playing in the Big Ten under Tom Izzo, a confident guy in the Summer League, that we would have seen more from him as well. And certainly the door's open with the way guys have been playing ahead of him and with injuries, that the door's open for him to step up, kind of like it was with Snell the last couple of years, and Snell never quite did it. The door's open again for someone like that to step up, but we really haven't seen it happen.
Yeah, you know, so quick on Valentine. Valentine, to me, agreed. He's been terrible so far. He hasn't, though, nearly got the consistent minutes that Cannon has, or the opportunity that Cannon has. And I think that just has to stop. I don't care how bad he plays defensively. You gotta keep Valentine out there. I think he's shown more as a passer, and he's not a horrible rebounder. But if Cannon's gonna shoot it this bad, then there's no reason why you don't put Valentine in. So I hope that changes. I think that will change. I know Cannon had a DNP recently. Let's hope that keeps up. Back to Nico. Nico, I can't tell you how frustrated and how angry I am about this whole situation. And I've defended Nico. I thought last year he had quietly a pretty solid year, shooting 39% from three. That's what we want from him, is to hit open threes as a stretch four. I keep on hearing all these excuses for Nico, and everybody's like, well, they're not putting him in position to succeed. Really? Position to succeed? Nico isn't good enough to build an offense around Mirotić. He's got one job. When Jimmy's on the court or when Wade's on the court and they attract all that attention, he's got to hit open threes. That's all he's had this year, and he sucked. He's been terrible. And to continually make excuses and act like this is the organization's fault that he sucks so bad is ridiculous. I saw a game this year earlier where his man peeled off him to double on Taj Gibson in the post, who was going off. I can't remember exactly what game it was. Taj immediately kicked it to Nico, who drove the lane and weakly missed a layup after it was some help. It's just excuse after excuse for this guy. And I've had it. I'm like, at some point you got to say, this guy is really not coming through when we need him badly. And I'm hoping to turn it around. I think he can. He has the ability. And in those few games where he has played well, he saw how good the Bulls can be. But he's so important off the bench, and I don't think it's any coincidence that we've gotten destroyed in these two games he's had DNP. Because you're right, Bobby Portis has sucked. I don't understand. I've never seen a player regress to this level. Tim, in that game, last game against Milwaukee, it was 21-15 when he walked off. When he came into the game, Butler walked out. 21-16. They immediately went on to a 16-0 run. It was 37-17 by the time they scored their next basket. He's terrible defensively. He's a horrible athlete. He doesn't really have the athleticism to defend the rim. And then there was a play where Butler drove the lane with Portis in the corner, you know, waiting for a three, and his man stood right on that block and waited for Jimmy to drive and help double on it. He doesn't draw any attention. It's so disappointing, or I don't even know, it's just soul-crushing to see how this guy's progressed in year two.
Right. There has been some concerns with the development of the young guys. I don't know if that's a player development issue, a confidence issue, probably some mix of that. Again, you're hoping that a Wade would help groom these guys, instill some confidence in them. And, but you're right, there hasn't been a lot of promise from some of these, you know, sort of X factors, I guess. You know what you're going to get out of Jimmy. Lopez has done what he's supposed to do. Taj is doing what he's supposed to do. Rondo has, I'd say, been a little under my expectations, slightly disappointing, but overall, producing more or less what I expected, and same with Wade. So it's those, all the other players, and Michael Carter-Williams has been hurt since three games into the season, and granted, he's not going to help a lot offensively, but when you see teams like Milwaukee running fast break drills and Antetokounmpo and Jabari Parker, it's like they're doing a three-man weave or something.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, they're having just way too much fun against the Bulls. And if you're a Bulls player and a leader like Wade, it's just embarrassing, right? To see those opponents just run all over them. Those Milwaukee games were really, really frustrating to watch.
I also, Butler, really quick though, Butler and Wade, no doubt, those guys have been fantastic all year. Absolutely fantastic. The last three games, they deserve a lot of the responsibility for what's happened. Down the stretch against the Timberwolves was just hero ball. I'm going to go one-on-one, you're going to go one-on-one, and they took a lot of bad shots and missed a lot of those shots down the stretch, and, they deserve, it's hard to, put any blame on them at all because they've been so good all year and are so responsible for what's been good this season. But then again, in game two, Jimmy, that was the worst game Jimmy's had all year by far. He was terrible. He's 3-14 from the field. He didn't get to the line once in 30 minutes. First time all year that's happened. You just got to call it like it is. He played terrible for a guy who's competing for player of the year, MVP, who's in the MVP discussion. That's just a performance you just don't see from those other guys.
Right. Yeah, well,
the frustration is here.
When you look at the other 25 a game or higher scorers in the league, it looks like Jimmy, to me, has to work a lot harder to get to his 25 than a lot of other players in the league.
True.
In his class. And so, game in and game out, I think even as in greatest shape and strong and versatile as he is, I think that probably does wear on him at times. I've always thought that about him. And so that's where I think getting the line is a real key component of his game. Number one, it gets him some easy points and, you know, kind of gives him a little breather, because he again seems to have to work pretty hard to get his points. So, well, that's most of the bad news I wanted to share. I would say, you know, good, and I'm using the word good, you know, quite loosely here, but I'd say the good news in this whole situation with the Bulls is that they're still in a playoff spot in the East. I mean, the way they played the last week, they look like they should be a lottery team, but you know, they're better than they played those last three games. And really the Minnesota game, it was just, you know, really the second half of that game, or even a lesser amount of time than that when they had the meltdown. But when you look at the Eastern Conference standings in particular, there's only a 3-win, 3-loss separation between, you know, there's basically 9 teams going for 6 spots, right? You know, Cleveland and Toronto are a lock to be in. And everyone else is pretty much bunched in there, just kind of like we talked about in our preseason preview of the East. And I guess the surprises to me, again, were the Wizards having such a slow start, but they're starting to pick it up now that they've got Wall and Beal healthy and, you know, are starting to win some games and creeping up the standings. The Pacers have been a little better than I expected, as well as the Knicks. But, you know, pretty much everyone else is just a couple of games either above or below 500, and the Bulls are right in the mix of that at 500. I'm not saying that's anything to be proud of, but what I'm saying is there's still plenty of time to make a move and get a playoff spot and, you know, and do some damage. There's no team in the East that's, you know, clearly a front runner when you get past Cleveland and Toronto. Do you agree?
I agree completely. You're absolutely right. I still think the Bulls, talent-wise, when you look at their top four, which is Lopez, Taj, and Butler and Wade, it's right there. I think probably more talented than almost any team in the East. I still feel they're just as good, if not better, than the Raptors if we're going in a 7-game series. And I think they, you know, do well. It's just we need somebody on this bench to step up. And instead of stepping up, almost every player to a man has regressed to the point that it's nauseating. I want to get your opinion on one team specifically, which is the team who just waxed us twice back to back, and that's the Bucks, who have two guys I really like, obviously in the Greek Freak, who's kind of becoming a superstar as well, you know, in this first early part of this year, who really can do almost anything on that court. And then also Jabari Parker, who I always liked in college. He had the knee injury high school and you know, 1 year, who had the knee injury. What do you think of those two kind of becoming, you know, taking it to the next level and kind of rivaling some, creating a team that could potentially rival the other teams in the East?
Well, certainly those two are very, very talented. And Antetokounmpo, as I mentioned in my preseason predictions, I think he was going to be the breakout player in the Eastern Conference. And he looks like he's on his way to that. You know, he's basically Kevin Durant with point guard skills. He can't shoot the ball from deep like Durant, but they're not really asking him to do that. But you know, he's so disruptive from the opponents because of his size and skill, and still a very, very young player. So they seem to have a plan there in terms of what they're putting together. You know, they're probably a player or two short for making a serious run at the second spot in the East. Middleton obviously is still injured, but the way those two have been playing, and obviously against the Bulls, that was way off the charts how well they played. But they're a handful. Right? You just don't see it every night yet with them, but it's starting to get there, and there seems to be some stability and a plan with that franchise, and they're certainly impressive. You know, one other thing I was going to say about the Bulls' performance at this point of the season, again, 13-13, which is, poor compared to where I thought they'd be. I thought they'd be 4 or 5 games over 500 at this point. But I really don't think it would be better if they had Rose, Noah, and Dunleavy. If they had that roster, I don't. You know, there might not have been this low point last week with the loss to Minnesota and the two Bucks losses. But so just as Bulls fans are thinking about what, you know, what the alternatives are, at least at this point, I don't think that roster, I'm glad they made the changes they did. I think it's a more forward-thinking roster. Rose, Noah, Ben Levy, I think, you know, things had run their course with those guys with the Bulls. So I don't know if that's good news, but I'm saying that I wouldn't buy it if someone said, well, if we would have kept Rose and Noah, and, you know, things would be much better. I don't think that's the case.
Oh, agreed completely. Noah's not playing at an NBA level right now. He didn't play that way last year. He wasn't an NBA player last year in the limited time he did play. You know, you can't be a center and shoot at those percentages. It's ridiculous. And he's not anywhere near the defensive force he once was. He'll still get you some rebounds, which is great. But, unfortunately he's been Tibbs, and he's, you know, half the man he used to be. And I think he's going to be that way for the rest of his career, for however long it is. But, I mean, New York is just, all my friends in that town are telling me there's an article out every day about what a disaster that signing was. So that was a good move to let him go. Derek's obviously playing well, I think. But the problem was last year I thought he played pretty well in the second half and it didn't correlate to winning. I don't think what Derek's bringing is a good fit with Jimmy, and it was clear last year that wasn't a good fit and it doesn't correlate to winning. So then there's always the specter of the injuries, and I know he's missed a few games recently. He's going to hopefully be healthy, and I hope he's healthy for the rest of his career, but just not the same guy he was, just the fact. He doesn't cause the attention. The defenses do not react to Derrick Rose like they did when he was healthy and, you know, as MVP. Just not the same guy. So I wish him all the best. He's still very good, just nowhere near what he was. And I think getting Lopez for him is, in the long run, probably better for us.
Right. Well, and I think the key to the Knicks' success is the continued development of Porzingis, and then they have a coach that really knows what he's doing in Hornacek. So the Knicks are improved, which I said that they would improve, but we'll see how these teams sustain it that the Bulls are kind of neck and neck with right now in the East.
Yep, agreed. So moving on, I'd like to get your thoughts a little bit on Craig Sanger, and, you know, just what a great guy. It's a shame, you know, what happened, and cancer is, you know, obviously a horrible disease. It took my mom this year and just a horrible thing. But I'd like to get your thoughts on his life and how he lived and your general impression. Did you ever get to meet him?
You know, I never did, but certainly have been aware of him. Actually, you know, his longevity as a sports journalist is pretty amazing. When you think of him going all the way back to Hank Aaron crossing home plate after hitting 715 against the Dodgers. There's Craig Sager right there at home plate to interview him. So, you know, that's going back quite a few years. But obviously with his role with the NBA and the Turner Network has been, you know, a key to the growth of the league, really. I mean, I'm not saying it's all due to him, but what a great ambassador for the game and just a positive energy guy. And, you know, I guess if you're looking to make your mark in a career, especially something like that, broadcasting, I know his wardrobe kind of became his calling card in some ways, but which some people liked it, some thought it was a little obnoxious. Obviously, it became a symbol for his fight against cancer. It became, you know, a much more meaningful thing than just a loud sport jacket or some, you know, uniquely colored shoes or something. But the fact is he had the talent and knowledge and charm to kind of back all that up. So I give him a lot of credit for kind of defining his brand and having the longevity and skill to keep it going. And of course the Chicago fans are probably aware of his ties to Northwestern where he went to school and tried to walk on to the basketball or football teams and ended up becoming the mascot at Northwestern and then a Batavia, Illinois native, which I checked because he's just a couple of years younger than the great Dan Issel, who's an NBA basketball Hall of Famer, who's also from Batavia, and then the great football quarterback Kenny Anderson, who played for the Bengals for many years. Those two are just a couple of years older than Craig Sager, so I can imagine they were probably big role models and influences on Craig as he was growing up as an athlete in Batavia back in the day. So just some positive thoughts out to Craig and what a positive influence he was on the game.
Great stuff, Tim. Yeah, I had no idea it was from Batavia or those guys, Issel and Kenny. Quick question. I'd like to get into a little topic here about college basketball. I know you're pretty close to UCLA and you follow that team a lot and the way things are going with the beloved Bulls. I mean, if things take a downward turn, I would not be surprised if they just blow this up, which is fine, you know, fine with me. Either if it, either go for it and blow it up or, you know, continue to contend, I think, this year. And I think they'll probably get played better, and I think they'll make a few moves to get the team better. But I'd still like to hear your opinion on UCLA and give us a little 411 on some of the players there that are really making a difference.
Right. Well, out here on the West Coast, and I've been out here for over 30 years in Southern California and have followed UCLA basketball and college basketball closely. And this particular UCLA team is quite special, and we'll see if they can sustain it. They're currently unbeaten and ranked number 2 in the country. They went into Rupp Arena and beat Kentucky. But I just thought I'd kind of update the listeners as they're watching college basketball this season. And, you know, I know some of the West Coast teams, due to the time difference and so on, may not get quite the attention in the Midwest and back on the East Coast. But this is a pretty elite team, and there's two players in particular. Lonzo Ball, who's a freshman point guard that I've been lucky to watch in person since he was a sophomore in high school, and a really compelling player, unselfish, kind of in the mold of a Jason Kidd, Magic Johnson, Steve Nash, Ginobili. So someone whose statistics don't really measure the impact he has on a game. So he's a really fun player to watch, and there's already talk about him potentially being the first pick of the draft as a point guard, which would not surprise me at all. And he's kind of created this whole atmosphere of unselfishness and passing, and UCLA, to this point in the season, almost looks like the Golden State of college basketball. They really share the ball. They have outside shooters. Ball, in particular, Lonzo Ball, is an interesting stat. He has more assists than shots attempted on the season, which, you know,
wow.
And, you know, so it just kind of shows you what he's all about. And
how is he as a shooter? How is he as a shooter?
Well, he's got a unique release because the ball gets the right kind of backspin, but he's a right-handed player, and he kind of shoots it from almost his left shoulder. So it's an odd shot release, but it's effective. And he can score a variety of ways as well. He's got some hops, so he'll score on an alley-oop dunks. He gets in the passing lanes and gets steals and goes down and finishes with, you know, dunks, left-hand layups, reverse layups. You know, he's got all, you know, that whole repertoire as well. So he'll have to kind of tighten up his outside shot and his release, but it's not really limited him that far, thus far, I'd say. There's one other player to note as well, another freshman who's from right here in San Diego named TJ Leaf, who's a 6'10 forward who's, again, a very smooth and skilled player. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Bobby Jones, who used to play for the Sixers with Dr. J and on some of those great teams. So, you know, and probably even more skilled in terms of post moves and as a passer than Bobby Jones was. So I'd say if the college basketball season ended today, those two players would probably be first-team All-Americans, believe it or not. That's how well they're playing.
Wow.
But it's interesting that the bloodlines of the UCLA team, and, you know, we talk a lot about connecting the dots in basketball history. Well, of course, the coach of UCLA is Steve Alford, the Indiana legend under Bobby Knight, and played for a handful of years in the NBA and has been coaching college basketball for quite a few years. One of the all-time Indiana legends as a high school and college player. And then his son, Bryce Alford, is a starting guard for UCLA alongside Lonzo Ball. So, and Bryce is a really good shooter and very solid college player. Probably not an NBA player, but you know, maybe could sneak onto somebody's roster, but a real fun college player to watch. Another key player for UCLA is Aaron Holiday, who's the younger brother of Jrue Holiday from the Pelicans, and Justin Holiday, who's now a Knick but was on the Bulls last year. So this is the third of three brothers who are very prominent players. Obviously, his two older brothers are in the NBA right now. And then I mentioned TJ Leaf, And his father, Brad Leaf, was a excellent college player at Evansville back in the day and then played overseas for about 20 years. In fact, TJ was born in Tel Aviv, Israel, when his dad was playing overseas. And then, again, being here in San Diego, I've kind of followed the Leaf family and their story. And there's an older brother of TJ's, Troy Leaf, that played a year at UC Santa Barbara and then at a Division II school. He had great success at Azusa Pacific. And when he was in high school, he at the time broke the San Diego section scoring record. So, you know, quite a basketball family. And then Lonzo Ball, who I mentioned, has two younger brothers that are phenomenal talents. One's a senior in high school now that's headed to UCLA next year. The other's a sophomore in high school. So LiAngelo and LaMelo Ball. So put those names in the back of your mind, listeners, because you'll be hearing about these two as well. LiAngelo Ball had back-to-back games earlier this high school season of 56 and 72 points.
Wow. 72.
And then LaMelo, who's the sophomore, he's about 6'3 now. Reminds me a lot of Steph Curry. So they're all very talented players. Lonzo's at UCLA today and the other two have verbally committed. So anyway, kind of the reemergence of UCLA basketball. And I've seen them play a couple of times in person this season. I saw them beat Nebraska and I saw them beat Michigan. So a couple of Big Ten schools that, the Big Ten fans back in the Midwest will be seeing more of this year. UCLA took care of those two teams fairly easily. So, really fun to watch, and their unselfishness and style of play, and currently ranked number 2 in the nation.
Great. You know, I'd like to get your opinion back to the NBA on one final topic, which is the resting of players that seems to be getting a lot of in the news quite a bit. You know, I'm all for resting guys. I think that it's important. I think that what Thibodeau is doing in Minnesota is, you know, a shame. I don't think he should be treating the long NBA season, and we've kind of evolved and discovered that, hey, it's not a great idea to play these guys, you know, 42 to 43, 44 minutes a game, and they should be getting their rest, and, you know, it will lead to injuries as science has gotten better. And, you know, I'd just like to get your take on this whole process of what's happening, and what do you think should be done about it?
Right. Well, you know, I think there's a couple of ways to approach it, and I think managing minutes in games is one way to do it. I think when it's a situation where Cleveland elects not to bring LeBron James, Kevin Love, and Kyrie Irving on a road trip at all, they don't even take them to Memphis, I think that's a little extreme the other way, right? Now, you know, Popovich resting Tim Duncan when he's almost 40 years old and maybe not having him play the last game of a road trip or not playing a back-to-back or kind of how the Bulls or doing it with Wade, you know, not playing back-to-backs. That I understand, but, you know, players kind of still in the prime of their careers or, you know, or not even into the prime yet, like those three players from Cleveland. I think there's an issue with that in terms of just fan expectations and, I don't know, that just kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And the analogy I was thinking, you know, Fred, what if the Rolling Stones were coming to Chicago and you were looking forward to seeing that show and you spent your money on a good ticket, showed up, and they said, well, you know, Keith isn't going to play tonight. You know, Keith's resting. We've got another show tomorrow night in Milwaukee. So, yeah, Mick will be out there, but no Keith tonight. You know, that's the way I think of it, right? And I just, you know, I think fans deserve an opportunity to see players, and the game with Cleveland and Memphis, and I think a few fans had signs that I saw where, you know, you ruined my Christmas, right? But think about it, right? It might be the one game, a fan, gets to see, or father taking his son to a game to see LeBron James play, maybe the only chance or time they get to do it, and LeBron's not injured, and you know, they just opt to not play him. It just doesn't sit right with me.
No, I understand what you're saying. You know, it'd probably be a good idea to at least have those guys there and attend the game. But, you know, then again, there's no doubt that, I mean, these guys are bigger, stronger, faster. I think they're playing harder at both ends. And
the only time you're, there's always an injury risk when you're playing, no matter what. And, to mitigate that risk, I'm fine with the occasional sit downs. And it's unfortunate for some fans, no doubt, but that's going to be priced into the ticket, I think, going forward, that the knowledge that, hey, they might not be playing depending on when the game is. And you should try to price that into the ticket. And when they are playing, hey, that ticket's going to be worth that much more on the secondary market. It's a tough call. I understand what you're saying. And I know Jordan always talked about how, hey, this is the first time someone may be out there watching me. And that's what made him partly so special, is he did understand that. And that's why he played so hard all the time. But I also understand the other side, right? I mean, I think LeBron missing 2 weeks last year was huge. Basically just taking a vacation in the middle of the season, allowing himself to get a second wind. I'm not sure if he would have been able to do what he did in June if he played all 82 games, 40 minutes a game.
Well, and I agree. I understand that. And I think another potential solution to this is something we've talked about on and off on podcasts for a while, is the NBA fixing the schedule where there's not back-to-backs, or we eliminate the preseason and there are more gaps where there aren't situations where there is a heavier injury risk, right, due to condensed number of games in a few days and things like that. So I think there's ways to work around it, and maybe a few of, you know, these issues that we've touched on and fans and the media have touched on over the last couple of years now, with back-to-backs and guys resting and, just the length of the season and the wear and tear, as marketable and, rock stars as these guys are, I think all those things need to be considered, where if a fan buys a ticket to a Cleveland game, they should, they have a reasonable expectation to see LeBron James play, right? And I understand that there's no 100% guarantee. There are going to be situations with injuries or, that's not going to happen. But I don't know. There's just been a few situations lately that have kind of tipped the scale for me the other way that I think it needs to be addressed in some fashion. And again, maybe it's not even the teams and the players. It's just that the schedule's set up in such a way where kind of issues won't raise themselves as often.
I agree completely with that. I think that's where it needs to be addressed, within the schedule, ending the preseason and figuring out ways to stop these back-to-backs in 4 games in 5 nights. The wrap-up, though, what was our final topic we wanted to talk about? And something else on the list. Anything else you wanted to discuss before we put our separate ways?
Well, the new collective bargaining agreement looks like it's pretty well situated. I guess the two thoughts I had, one is, I see the one and done is still in play, which I still never quite understood why the Players Association wasn't protecting guys. I know we talked about guys like Isaiah Cannon, but kind of the fringe guys, right? The guys that are already established in the league that have maybe played a couple years, the Garrett Temples, Anthony Tollivers, Isaiah Cannon players in the league that their jobs are the ones that are at risk when there's a one and done guy that comes into the league that's really not ready, but he's going to take a roster spot away from a veteran. So I never understood why the Players Association didn't take a little stronger stance of making a two and done or some other option for young guys to come into the league. Plus, it's better for the league to have a more finished product. And I'm sure the NCAA would prefer to keep these guys around a little more to make the NCAA tournament and certain star players more known. And then that would make their brand a little stronger as they come into the league. But I guess the other side of it, I'm glad they're settling it and there's not going to be any kind of lockout. I know it's always a treat for me in the summer to go to Vegas for the summer league. And there's been occasions where, because of the lockout, there's been no Vegas summer league. So I guess the happy news for me is I get to keep that routine and get to some summer league games without disruption.
Yeah, hopefully I can get there with you this year. That's a tough one, though, Tim. I've always had an issue with, you got to go to college for 2 years. And, in my opinion, college is there to set you up for the rest of your life. It's not a job. And when you have guys that could theoretically, I mean, Kevin Garnett, LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, these guys might not have had the same careers. If what happens if they would have gone to college and gotten injured in year one? Again, college is supposed to, you go there so you can find a skill or figure out what you're going to do with your life and make a living for your family. And to kind of rob these guys of even one year, it's never really sat well with me. I don't think it's right.
Right. Well, then I guess then they should have a none and done, right? Let them come right out of high school then. If they're going to do one, why not do two, right? So where it's a little more of a commitment on a number of levels. That's just my thought there.
They should have like a minor league, use the developmental league, like baseball minor leagues. And I think they're starting to do that. I know Paul Zipser was just recently signed in the Windy City Bulls. But I think that's what that should be for. And then if you're going to draft a high school player like this, then have the option to send them to developmental league and then fill that spot with a player who's a little bit more mature.
Right. And I think the D-League is developing. You know, more teams are having an affiliate team near where the NBA franchise is, and that bridge is happening a little more like Major League Baseball, where the D-League is like the AAA team to help develop some of these players. And you know, obviously with the Bulls, you know, Zipser, maybe Denzel will start getting some more minutes now, but you know, I think just getting playing time and experience is what he needs, and so we'll see. And I think having Michael Carter Williams back is going to help. I mean, I thought he looked very solid. We have a pretty small sample size, but early in the season, just when he came into the game, his defensive presence and length and versatility is something I think they've missed. Obviously, the discrepancy we've got with three-point shooting and the lack of that, he's not going to solve that problem. But I think as an overall contributor, I think Michael Carter Williams will help.
So agree completely.
Sounds like he's a week or so away, I guess.
Yeah, I agree completely. You can play inside out with him where you can utilize McDermott and Nico on the outside and then have him play as a post player and take advantage of, you know, matchups with smaller point guards. I really like him, and I was really impressed with him on the defensive end. So I think he will help their defense. It's a huge problem with the players they have coming off the bench. Every single player is, with the exception of Felicio, is probably is offensive orientated and, you know, not very good defensively. So, you know, hopefully the next few games will be better for the beloved Bowl. We could have more positive things to talk about in the next episode.
Well, I agree. Well, I'll be watching closely tonight to see how they respond against Detroit, because they can only improve, in my view. So I just want to see a marked improvement in effort and execution and energy from them. So we'll see what happens.
Amen. Tim, thank you so much for giving us so much of your time. It's always a joy to talk to you and have you on the Bullseye. Looking forward to next week or hopefully later this week when we'll have you on again, and hopefully with, again, happier topics.
Exactly, Fred. Well, if I don't speak with you before then, Merry Christmas, and we'll talk to you soon.
Merry Christmas to you, brother. Talk to you later.